The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from theteenmagazine.com and teenvogue.com. Our first article today from theteenmagazine.com, College Application Timeline, When and How to Get Started. And this article was written by Williana Serve. I know, it's summertime and everyone just wants to relax and enjoy their pool parties. However, like it or not, college application season is approaching. And if you're reading this any other time, good job for getting ahead of the curve. Or, college application season is here, and you're looking for advice on approaching the situation. Don't worry, this article is going to give you a basic timeline for when you need to start preparing for every step of the college application process. September to April of junior year. Right now, it's pretty early in the game, and you have plenty of time before you start actually applying to colleges. The best thing you can do is prepare for any AP courses you might be taking and choose a date for the SAT. It's always better to start studying for the SAT early on so you have the flexibility of multiple dates and can take it multiple times if you don't get the score you want. It is highly recommended that you schedule meetings with your high school/college counselor to ensure you are on track academically and fulfilling all necessary requirements. Additionally, it is advisable to begin formulating a list of individuals you would like to approach for letters of recommendation. Consider reflecting on a passion project or activity that you intend to pursue during the summer, such as an internship, online class, or volunteer opportunity. This thoughtful preparation will contribute to a well-rounded application and enhance your chances of success. May through June of junior year. Just because it's 80 degrees out doesn't mean you can rest yet. Complete your AP tests and maintain your SAT study routine if you're aiming for an improved score. Ensure you register for upcoming test dates accordingly. If you haven't already, seize the opportunity to embark on college tours and solidify your preferences for prospective schools. Now you should set up your Common Application and Coalition Application account and have your basic information filled out. Afterward, begin requesting letters of recommendation from your teachers or other recommenders. Here are some valuable tips to consider when writing your letters of recommendation. Choose the right recommender. Select someone who knows you well and can speak to your abilities, character, and achievements. Ideally, choose someone in a position of authority or who has first-hand experience working closely with you. Personalize your request. When asking for a letter of recommendation, remind the recommender of your shared experiences, accomplishments, or specific projects you worked on together. This personalized touch can help them recall and highlight your strengths more effectively. Share relevant information. Provide your recommender with a current resume or summary of your accomplishments, along with any specific guidelines or requirements for the recommendation letter. Include information about the program, job, or scholarship you are applying to so they can tailor their letter accordingly. Be clear and specific. Clearly articulate the purpose of the recommendation letter, specifying what aspects of your skills, character, or achievements you would like them to highlight. The more specific and targeted your request, the more effective and impactful the letter will be. Follow up and express gratitude. After your recommender has submitted the letter, express your gratitude with a heartfelt thank you note. Let them know how much you appreciate their support and the time they invested in writing the letter on your behalf. Keep recommenders updated. If you receive positive outcomes, such as admission to a program or securing a job, keep your recommenders informed. They will appreciate hearing about your success, and it can strengthen your professional relationships. July through August, between junior and senior year. Initiate the brainstorming process for your Common Application essay and begin drafting one or two rough versions to refine your ideas. At this stage, you should have finalized your list of schools to which you plan to apply. Utilize your available free time to continue visiting college campuses and gathering insights while simultaneously working on drafting your Common Application Activities section. Consider the October or December test dates if you intend to take the final SAT test and still aspire for improvement. Alternatively, you may opt for a test optional approach and concentrate on honing the other components of your application. Commence the initial draft of your supplemental essays for each school, allowing ample time for revision and enhancement. Think about any potential scholarships like the QuestBridge program, Coca-Cola scholarship, or the Jack Kent Cook scholarship that you would like to apply to in the fall and start applying for them towards the end of the summer. September of senior year. Ah, senior year, the time for Spirit Week, your last homecoming, and last, well, everything. But stay focused. You still have a long way to go before you can call it quits. Check in with your recommenders to ensure they're on track with your letters. Finalize your Common App essay when you don't have as much work in the first month of school. Trust me, it gets hectic. If you're satisfied with your SAT/ACT score already, look into sending them to the colleges of your choice, and by now, your college list should definitely be finalized. October through December of senior year. Even though the holiday mask of Halloween and Christmas is here, you still need to finish up your Common App essay and finalize your supplements once and for all. Check in with your recommender one last time to ensure they have your letter in by now. Don't be afraid to remind them of the deadline. Suppose you opt for early decision or early action applications. In that case, submitting them in November and your UC applications, if applicable, is advisable. By December, you can anticipate receiving the outcomes for your early decision or early action applications. If you were accepted into your top choice from the jump, congratulations! Then these next few months will be a little bit different for you, since you have already chosen the college you want to attend for the next 4 years. If you didn't get in, that's okay. If you haven't finished your regular decision supplements, you should get on that ASAP. January through March of senior year. You really don't have much to do here, except deal with the seasonal depression. Ensure you will fulfill any interview requirements if offered the opportunity, as they can provide valuable insights into your candidacy. Also, initiate applying to local or external scholarships to expand your financial aid options and maximize opportunities for funding your education. If you got into your top choice ED, early decision, consider attending any events and getting to know your future classmates. March through April of senior year. Spring has sprung, and you're finally approaching the end. But don't let senioritis take hold of you yet. Let the regular decisions roll and start considering your options. Attend Admitted Students Weekend and see which school best fits you. In the event that you find yourself on a wait list, it is recommended to compose a letter expressing your continued interest in the school. Craft a compelling letter emphasizing your genuine enthusiasm for the institution and provide any relevant updates or achievements since submitting your initial application. Proactively communicating your dedication and eagerness may enhance your chances of moving off the waitlist and securing admission. But keep your options open and consider a backup school in the worst-case scenario that you don't get off. ED students should continue celebrating their friends' acceptance, especially if they get into the same school as you. Lastly, finalize which school you would like to matriculate to. May through June of senior year. After a long, hellish year filled with ups and downs, you're finally at the finish line. You should submit your enrollment deposits by May 1st. Start filling out your housing application, making your schedule, and saying your final goodbyes to your high school. If you receive an acceptance from the same school as a classmate or friend, embrace the opportunity to connect with them. Reach out and converse with other individuals who have also been accepted. Consider attending orientation events and activities where you can interact with fellow incoming students. This is an underrated last tip, but thank your recommenders. Letters of recommendations are very important in the eyes of admissions officers, and without their support, your application could have been on the teetering edge between an acceptance or a rejection. If you didn't get to the school of your choice or didn't get off the wait list, try falling in love with the school you're already at. Use this timeline as a rough guide to work on your transfer applications. Either way, be glad that no matter what happens, you worked hard and have a chance to relax now. Hopefully, this timeline has helped you figure out where you should be in terms of progress when it comes to applying. As a former senior myself, I know college applications can be stressful and time-consuming. But if you haven't heard from anyone else, let me say that I'm proud of you all for taking your first step to complete one of the biggest moments of your life and a good chunk of your senior year. Even though it may seem awful now, you'll look back at this moment and potentially be grateful that it got you to where you want to be. If not, that's okay too. You'll still look back and learn from these experiences that will make you even stronger in the future. This may seem cliche, but if you can avoid it, never wait until the last minute for your essays. Take it from me. College applications are a marathon, not a sprint. You need to pace yourself and break it down the best way so your application can be the highest quality it's ever been. Good luck, seniors. Our next article from theteenmagazine.com, The Ultimate Guide on How to Develop a Goal-Oriented Mindset. And this article was written by Abhi Bhadia. Let's be honest, all of us have goals, and goals require discipline. Discipline is probably the toughest skill to master. After all, it requires motivation and consistency of that motivation over a long period of time. Discipline is essential when, even without motivation, you do a certain action or multiple actions. Whether it's working out almost every day, even if your body doesn't want to, or studying for a long period of time when you don't feel like it, discipline is really tough to master. However, when pursuing a goal, as said before, discipline can take you places where even motivation can't take you. Outlined below are a few steps to mastering the art of discipline and becoming a goal-oriented individual. What is your goal? When trying to pursue a goal, many people forget about the goal itself. After all, we are so caught up in the journey towards the goal that we never really think about our goal. What is your goal? Is it achievable? If it isn't achievable yet, can you achieve it later? How much time does it require? Do you have the skills required to achieve the goal? All these questions and more should be taken into consideration. A goal isn't just an end result, but a plethora of all the questions listed above. Knowing what your goal is can enable you to know if you are going in the right direction. How are you going to achieve your goal? Is it as simple as learning a skill, like knowing how to cook a basic omelet, or is it much tougher, like wanting to learn a language? To have a goal-oriented mindset, you must know that every goal has its own path. While discipline is the common recipe for all goals, you are going to have good days, bad days, amazing days, and ugly days, and it's up to you how you are going to react to that. As a goal-oriented person, having guidelines and a safe plan for every type of day is important. After all, not working enough on your goal or overexerting yourself for one goal is just going to cause regret later down in life. Learning how to make a plan is an important step towards becoming a goal-oriented person. Don't be afraid of competition. In a world of 8 billion people, you are bound to run into competition for your goal. Don't be afraid of competition and back out. Trying something and trying your best is the single most important thing in competition. One day, you might be the best to do something, but another, you might be the worst. You must know how to learn from the mistakes you made and from those better than you. Arrogance is something you cannot have, and you must be open to absolutely every person's skills and outputs. Competition will also hone your skills, and backing out of such competition can only hurt your chances of achieving a goal and becoming a goal-oriented person. Can your goal be achieved faster? If you give a certain goal a time frame of 3 days, think for a second. Can you achieve it in 2 days? Maybe 1 day? Speed is the most important trait in today's world, as being faster than someone at doing something with the same quality makes money. After all, there is the old adage, time is money. As a goal-oriented person, you must always analyze the fastest and most effective route towards success. However, achieving a goal faster shouldn't come at the cost of properly achieving it, and if you need to cheat your way towards the end result, then you may need to rethink whether this is even necessary and if your future will be affected, which it will. Take criticism, but don't be discouraged by negative comments. Another important factor of a goal-oriented person is that they can take constructive criticism and weed out flat-out mean and hurtful comments. For constructive criticism, using the advice given can exponentially increase your chances of reaching a goal, but taking too many negative comments to your head can exponentially set you back. While this is much easier said than done, as a lot of comments over time will weigh someone down, it is important not to stay in that position and to rebound back towards your goal. Surround yourself with equally disciplined and minded people. Much like how a flower will thrive if other flowers around it are also thriving, you cannot grow unless you surround yourself with a few like-minded and positive individuals. After all, humans are social creatures, and without communication with others, you are left at a severe disadvantage in achieving your goal. It is also important to note that maybe some of your friends and even family are negatively minded individuals, and therefore you might need to distance yourself away from them. After all, if one plant in a group of plants rots, then eventually all the plants in that group will rot. This can be related to your mindset. Staying with negative people can induce doubt and fear about achieving something. Positivity is the complete opposite and can instill courage and hope. Pursue a goal that's yours, not another person's. This goes mostly for parents. So, parents, if you are reading this, listen up. Please don't force your kids to do something that they might not want to do. Whether it be forcing them to play a sport they don't like, to pursue a career that they don't want, please don't force them, and listen to your kids. 100% of the time, when kids are placed with these expectations, they burn out so quickly and lose interest in everything in life. They even lose interest in hanging out with friends and other important aspects of life. Instead, talk to them about their goals. Foster a good relationship with your kids so that they can talk to you about anything. A goal-oriented person is only going to be affected when the goal is something they can relate to and something they want to do. Becoming a goal-oriented person is not an easy task, but everyone and anyone can do it. As long as you put in the hard work and try to improve yourself, you are already winning and getting closer towards any goal you may want to achieve. Our next article from teenvogue.com, Oppenheimer Historical Accuracy, A Historian Answers Your Lingering Questions. And this article was written by Emma Spector. And there is a note. This article was originally published by Vogue. If you're a recent arrival to the planet and have yet to hear of Barbenheiming, i.e. the practice of going to see Greta Gerwig's Barbie and Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer in quick succession, ideally within the space of 24 hours, then much of the current entertainment news cycle may seem foreign to you, as the two films currently dominate the box office and the attention spans of seemingly everyone I know. I didn't relish seeing Oppenheimer, which is based on the 2005 biography American Prometheus by Kai Bird and Martin J. Sherwin. After Barbie, in retrospect, I should have swapped them and used Barbie as a kind of palate-cleansing hot pink mental sorbet. But once I had, I found myself with several lingering questions about the work of the real-life Manhattan Project and some of the figures depicted in the film. For answers, I turned to Cindy Keller, founder and president of the Atomic Heritage Foundation. Read her responses below. What was J. Robert Oppenheimer's wife, Kitty's, profession? Kitty was a biologist and was briefly a lab technician at Los Alamos under the supervision of Dr. Louis Hempelman, in charge of the hospital and workers' health, but quit after a year. As a trained botanist, Kitty felt stymied professionally at Los Alamos, and instead, she led an active social life. She often hosted cocktail parties for small groups of women to provide a distraction from the high-pressure environment of Los Alamos. Kitty was also an important confidant for her husband. Robert Oppenheimer trusted his wife completely and frequently sought her advice on a host of issues facing the Manhattan Project. Kitty and her husband relied on each other for a solid foundation in the chaotic years of the project and in their newfound celebrity in the years to come. What was Einstein's exact involvement in the creation of the atomic bomb? Einstein's famous equation, E equals mc squared, explains the tremendous energy contained in the nucleus of an atom that is released in an atomic bomb. Because he was the most famous scientist in the world, he was approached to write a letter to President Franklin D. Roosevelt. In August 1939, Einstein sent a letter to FDR warning him that Germany could be working on a weapon of tremendous destructive power and urging the United States to mount a similar effort. That work eventually became the Manhattan Project. However, Einstein did not work directly on the atomic bomb project. Instead, Oppenheimer took Einstein's ideas and theories and, based on them, directed the Manhattan Project scientists at Los Alamos to design and test an atomic bomb. What kind of impact did the test have on local tribes and the neighboring towns around the Los Alamos? There were Pueblo communities and Hispanic towns around the Los Alamos laboratory. Many of them were employed by the laboratory as construction workers, technicians, and support staff. The scientists also hired them for babysitters and housekeepers. The Trinity test was conducted 210 miles south of Los Alamos at the Alamogordo bombing range, an area known as the Jornada del Muerto. Hispanics and Mescalero Apache tribal members in New Mexico claim that the Trinity test resulted in health problems for generations of those living near the site and are seeking compensation from the federal government. Is the Los Alamos town still there? Yes. What was it used for after the development of the bomb? The laboratory continued its mission to conduct research into nuclear weapons and today employs 17,000 people working on national security issues. The Manhattan Project National Historic Park was established in 2015 at three sites: Los Alamos, New Mexico, where scientists designed and built the bomb; Oak Ridge, Tennessee, where huge factories produced enriched uranium, the fuel for the Hiroshima bomb; and Hanford, Washington, where first-of-a-kind reactors produced plutonium for the Nagasaki bomb. You can visit the historic Manhattan Project sites at Los Alamos, including many shown in the film Oppenheimer. And our next article from TeenVogue.com. Lindsay Lohan welcomed her first baby with husband Bader Shammas. and this article was written by Elizabeth Logan. Lindsay Lohan is a mom. The Parent Trap star revealed via representatives that she gave birth to a son. Per Pop Sugar's source, Lohan delivered a beautiful, healthy son named Luai, which Elite Daily notes is an Arabic name meaning strong or steady, on July 17th. The family is over the moon in love, said the rep. The news came just days after Lohan gave followers a peek at her ocean-themed nursery all ready for its new inhabitant. In an interview, Lohan explained on the inspiration behind the theme. I feel so peaceful by the ocean. I wanted to create a space where my little one and I could share in that feeling, she said. Regarding the seaside mural, she added, The planes and the sailboat felt so instantly classic, but the almost rainbow watercolor effect felt really fresh and unexpected. It warmed the space so much, and I can't wait to point out all the cute little elements to my babe. As they say, the mother is mothering. In March 2023, Lohan announced that she and husband Bader Shammas were expecting, posting a picture of a onesie on Instagram. We are blessed and excited, the 37-year-old wrote in the caption. She shared her pregnancy journey with fans and followers, including a serene snap from her poolside baby moon. She really does feel peaceful by the water. Lindsay Lohan and Shammas, a financier, began dating in 2018 and announced their engagement in 2021. They wed secretly in 2022. Since going public with her marriage, Lohan has expressed interest in expanding their family. In an interview with Vogue, while promoting her Netflix film Falling for Christmas, Lohan said that she's already considering which family heirlooms she'd like to pass down to her future children. Shammas gave me a Cartier bracelet, and it was our first Christmas together, so that was really special to me, she said. That will always stay with me and go to my daughter when we have kids. We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.